overwhelmingly not true when you actually look at it and study it, is the consumer will pay more for something better. And they will pay more for something unique and personalized and different. And they love to. You just got to give them a reason to. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with Whiskey Wednesday with my main man, Jake Sheehy.
What's up? What's happening?
What's up, buddy? How you doing today?
Feeling amazing. Great day to be alive.
Feeling good. Good start to the week.
Man, I can't be happier. Today's a great day. Feeling good. Got some great stuff on the agenda.
Awesome.
Feeling good, man.
Good. Let's dive into it. What do we got today?
Okay. First and foremost, picking a target audience. We're going to go through everything specific about that, why you need to do it, what things are important, when you should start that process. We're going to go into what to do when bookings slow down.
Yeah.
If this happens to you, or if you even just want to sell, if you want to change the location of your lifestyle asset, you want to vacation somewhere else, where should you go? Then we're diving into two questions that we got on the school platform about Airbnb's 15% service fee that we talked about last week. We had some questions and just want to clear some things up on that. But let's talk about this, man. Something happened. It's very sad.
Rough week for us a little bit.
Tough one. Do you want to take it?
My mom passed away last week. Yep. Last Wednesday. And so she had a 3-year battle with cancer and it was a rough battle. And so she was nearing the end of that. Man, her little body just had enough. It was tough. It's bittersweet when they're going through that. It sounds so cliche to say they're in a better place. When you watch somebody that struggles with an illness like that, that is just painful and grueling. And it's just, you just watch it and you want for it to stop so bad, but the only way it stops is you lose them. And it's just tough. It's tough. She was a huge part of what we did around here at Odyssey. It's interesting as you reflect and you think back, because it was last Wednesday, and we were able to get her home from the hospital. She spent the last 2 weeks in the hospital, and just like, hey, listen, they're like, this is, there's nothing really we can do at this stage.
Right.
They're telling you that. So we got her home. And she was able to, we ended up getting on hospice and taking some of the pain away, but she was able to, lay down, and she died in my dad's arms that night. And it was kind of a storybook scripted ending from, they just celebrated their 50-year anniversary earlier this year. So it's been you go through the range of emotions, you go through the ups and downs, and you go through the sometimes I can talk about it and I can get through it without, just breaking down. And other times you tell four people about that are reaching out and sharing their stories and their memories and their love and support and everything else. And then the fifth person, you can't even get a word out, and it's this roller coaster. And it's so many of us have lost people that are so close to us. Right. Mm-hmm. And most people have experienced that kind of a loss and so you get so much, so many people reaching out and even though it's new, like I've never lost a mom. Mm-hmm. My wife, Teresa, has lost a mom. Right. And when she was 9, she lost her mom. And so she was very young. And, they leave us a little bit too soon. And you navigate this new chapter and you don't know what it's going to look like. But what you realize is there's a lot of people out there that have been through some of this before. And and it's unbelievable to me, the love and the support of just people reaching out saying, hey, we're thinking about you.
Right.
And so, I'll be grateful for that.
Yeah. It's a tough one. She will not be forgotten. She will be missed. She was a huge part, man. Yeah. When she came in here, she was a light. She was so kind. So
We're going to miss those cookies and those cards.
Yeah,
right?
Dude, I want more cookies, bro. Those are so good. Those are so good.
Yeah, we're going to miss her,
but, sorry about your loss, but
thanks,
we're going to keep moving forward. And, man, she was a light. All right. Yeah. Switching topics here, man. Now let's pick it up. All right, here we go, baby. We're diving in. We got to switch the mentality a little bit. Okay, here we go. Right. Exciting stuff here. Target audience. Okay,
all right, let's dive in.
So, we've talked about this in the past, and I really want to nail the the nail it down, because this is a huge thing. And I was thinking mainly about when people should do this, like if they should pick their target audience before they reach out to Jacob or you about finding the property. Because we talked to Jacob, maybe was it last week or the week before, about finding your perfect property. And some people get really emotional. They find this one, they think it's the best one. And I go, okay, if they think it's the best one, do they think it's the best one because they think it fits the target audience really well? Like it has the perfect amount of bedrooms and a place for the baby to sleep or the game room? Or are they picking it more just because they like the layout and stuff? So I really want to know more about the target audience, when you should do that, and how seriously niche down you should go.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of being very niche down, first of all. And so second is it kind of depends on the person a little bit. There are times when they're a little bit open to any different types of experiences or target audiences.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, though, I would say you want to choose your target audience and the experience prior to looking for the home, so you want to do it on the front end and say, hey, listen, I'm looking for, an adventure base camp right next to the national park, for example, or I'm looking for, right now we're going to be building a game day portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're saying, hey, listen, our target audience are people that are going to be going to these college conference football games and basketball. And it's just game day type of a portfolio. We know who our target audience is. We know the experience. So that helps us choose proximity to certain things. Mm. It helps us choose bedroom, bathroom counts based on, the ideal target audience. And so sometimes it's just, generally, I would say 90% of the time you want to have the target audience picked out prior to as you start to look for homes.
Mm.
And sometimes you'll find a home. Like I've been looking for homes before and I'm like, hey, listen, I'm looking for, an adventure cabin for somebody. And then all of a sudden I see the perfect couples getaway A-frame, for example. Right. And I'm like,
those A-frames.
I like those. And so I might be in the middle of my search and all of a sudden something else hits and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to pivot and go that way. But usually it's the home itself inspires something different. So you still are walking into it on the front end with a specific target audience and a experience, right? Because we always talk about we're in the experience business.
Right.
If I know that going into it, it helps me make buying decisions a lot easier. If I'm looking for, a multi-generational family, get together family reunion type property and I find, and I'm saying, hey, listen, I need at least 6 bedrooms, but I find a 6-bedroom, 2-bath house immediately. I'm going to discount that. Cause I'm like, okay, who's sharing 2 bathrooms if I have multiple families coming in there. Right. Mm-hmm. And so nobody wants to, you can share a bathroom with a family.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to share a bathroom with multiple families. Mm-hmm. And so, that's almost an easy example to say, yeah, I'm not looking at that probably for any target audience,
right?
But your target audience will help you determine certain features or certain things that you're looking for in a home. You might have let's say we found that same 6-bed, 6-bath house, but it only has 1 living room and there's not enough room for a dining room for anybody to go sit at and have, a communal space that is like, hey, listen, we can all get together here. Mm-hmm. And so it might say, hey, listen, I know that I'm going to be hosting larger groups, multiple families, they're on a reunion, they want to hang out together. So I need to have that like common area communal space that's big enough to accommodate that. Knowing all that just makes the search easier.
Yeah.
It makes it way easier. Now, I would, you asked, how much do we niche down, right?
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of niching down. And whether I'm niching down to a very specific target audience, but also niching down the experience I'm trying to provide, right? And so, we were just talking to one of our members who has a property in A&M country, Texas A&M country, right?
Okay.
They're down and they've got some Texas A&M stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They've got some that's like more like downtown, like, bars. They've got some conference center stuff. And they're like, well, the people come in for a lot of different things.
Right.
And so we're looking at it and we're saying, hey, listen, you really, because somebody's like, well, what if they don't, they were saying to us, well, what if they don't like the Aggies or what if they're not big fans of Texas A&M or football or basketball or, mm-hmm. or, you know, anything that has to do with the school or graduation. And we say, well, if you have some of it, they're still not going to like that. Right. You mm-hmm. have a little bit sprinkled here, a little bit of the downtown sprinkled in, a little bit of the, you know, the conference center area sprinkled in. And it's really trying to be a little of everything to everybody, but it's not that attractive to any of them because the person that's coming in for the conference is like, I don't really like the A&M stuff. I don't like the Aggies. So I'm not really, you know, mm-hmm. you know, keen on this part of it.
Right.
But maybe I like the conference room stuff, but maybe not. So I'll look and see what else is available.
Right.
When you take one of those things and really create this experience that is a very niche down experience, mm-hmm. it's that much more exciting for the people who are interested in that stuff. And mm-hmm. sure, it does repel stuff, some other people, right? Mm-hmm. If you really dive into this, like when we're doing these game day experiences, mm-hmm. we're diving into whatever campus that we're going to be like by, because mm-hmm. we want that game day experience, it's almost going to be like Texas A&M threw up all over that house. Right.
And right.
So the people who are coming in for that are going to be like, yeah, that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that to my house ever. Right. Right. But it's going to be a pretty fun experience while I'm there.
Uh-huh.
And that is way more attractive. And it's going to be easier mm-hmm. on the marketing side to get somebody to say, hey, yeah, I like that above and beyond everybody else. Because everybody else is kind of, they're kind of subdued. They're kind of muted the A&M vibe, right? Mm-hmm. If you will, in this example. And that's what he was doing. He was just kind of getting his fair share of business. It didn't work. And so we're saying, hey, listen, we need to just like, this thing needs to just come to life. We need to like tell the story of the Aggies and really like, you know, and really like take all of the traditions and put them everywhere. Mm-hmm. There are going to be people who are not Aggie fans who may not like that property, but those that are and that are coming there, remember, we have very limited inventory. You know, you have 52 weeks a year to sell, you know, your services, rent our properties. Mm-hmm. And if you're lucky, you're renting 3 or 4 nights a week during that time, during all of those 52 weeks. Some of the peak seasons, you might rent more of the whole week. Other times you might not rent most of it, but a good property is going to operate at 50 to 60% occupancy. So you're getting, you know, every weekend plus a couple extra days here and there.
Right.
And, you know, that's not a lot of people that have to say, hey, I really like that experience, but it's a way easier way to stand out in a crowd. Ultimately, in the beginning, that's the number one goal. We've got to stand out. Second, we've got to give the consumer a reason to pay us a different amount than everybody else is charging, which is likely more, right? Mm-hmm. We want them to pay us more than somebody else is charging. Mm-hmm. They pay for personalized, unique experiences. They pay for differentiation. That solves all three of those problems. Mm-hmm. And so we start to solve multiple problems on the marketing side, on the conversion side, on the customer experience side, all by leaning into a very specific customer experience and a very unique niche down experience when it comes to design and setting these properties up. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. I would also say if I'm looking at Airbnbs in Texas, right, and I'm going to go vacation there, I would pick one, even if I don't know. You're saying the Aggies. I literally have no idea who the Aggies are. I don't know anything about that stuff. But I know if I'm looking at these properties and one is like really decked out, really nice, that gets my attention more than the other ones. And I would still go there just because it's like I'm like, wow, someone put some time and effort into this, right? Instead of just like another home.
You don't know anything about them.
Right.
But you go down to College Station, Texas, and you're like, hey, listen, I don't really know anything about that. Well, guess what? The Aggies are a huge part of that local area. Mm-hmm. And when we go visit local areas, there are things that we don't know about an area, but we're interested in learning. We're interested in whether it's cultural events, whether it is new foods, whether it's, you know, just different traditions that people do in different areas of the country. Some of these areas, for this one, is a big college town, right? Mm-hmm. And so you go down and you learn about that, and you can actually tell this huge story about a huge part of the community, which is Texas A&M in College Station, Texas, right?
Yeah. So that helps with the telling a story part too. Even if, like, you know, we talked about the fly fishing cabin, you could really go lean into fly fishing and tell that whole story too. So that whole experience is really niched down. I love that. Do you think when you're doing a property and you have your target audience, are there ever like an overlap in amenities? Like I'm thinking to myself, would the game day property and the family retreat property, would they both still have a hot tub? Or would one, like the family retreat, be more dog friendly and the College Game Day one isn't dog friendly? Is there ever, you think there's an overlap?
Always. There's almost always overlaps, right? Okay. So there are certain things that you may not, like that you're going to probably take out of properties or not necessary in a property, mm-hmm. depending on the, but most of the amenities that we think about, mm-hmm. you know, the game rooms, yeah. or the, you know, the saunas or the hot tubs, mm-hmm. or the golf simulators or some of these cool things that we put in properties,
yeah.
the outdoor living spaces, mm-hmm. There's a ton of crossover. There's okay. like there, you know, whether I've got a College Game Day property or whether it's a fly fishing cabin, two mm-hmm. totally different experiences.
Right.
Both of them, a hot tub could do really well, yeah. right? That could be a nice amenity at both of them. Mm-hmm. And okay. so think of amenities as not necessarily as it's part of the experience in your home. Mm-hmm. But I think so many people think more into, well, I need to just go, if I'm struggling, I need to buy more amenities. Mm-hmm. I need to go in and I need to invest in more amenities. Maybe you do, mm-hmm. because there are certain properties you're competing with that have those amenities, right? Mm-hmm. And amenities, mm-hmm. just like proximity to stuff, make a difference in your revenue. Mm-hmm. However, everybody looks toward the same amenities, pools, hot tubs, saunas, pickleball right. courts, like all golf simulators, mm-hmm. all this different stuff. So your neighbors all have that too. What we're trying to do is raise the bar and really bring it to life and tell a different story and niche down. You're not going to probably ever niche down amenities, because
okay.
when an amenity gets popular, everybody's buying the amenity. Right. And so it becomes, the amenity becomes something that creates and makes it a fun place to stay, mm-hmm. but a lot of your competitors have the same amenities, mm-hmm. right? They're you know, the guest has the option to go get hot tubs at most homes
right.
at this stage in the game,
right?
And so amenities are not there. There's a ton of crossover in throughout different like target audiences and everything else that those major amenities are attractive to multiple different types of groups of people.
Mm, okay, last question on target audience. Do you feel like there's a certain number of levels you should go versus some that people already stop at? People will stop at location, maybe age, and somewhat of an experience, but you're saying, no, you should go maybe four more levels deep. You should do athletic ability, history of the town. Like, you, how deep, how many layers?
So what we typically try to do is we okay. say, okay, what's the star of this show? Who's mm-hmm. going to be the star of this show? What's mm-hmm. going to be the star of this story, right? Mm-hmm. What's the leading character? Is it the national park? Is it the theme park? Is it the college? Is it fly fishing? Is it an activity, right? So mm-hmm. we start with that, and then we go multiple layers deep.
Okay.
We try to find a lot of different information. If I chose the theme park as the star of my show, mm-hmm. I'm going to go multiple layers deep with the history, with some of the cool things that have happened at the theme park. Mm-hmm. We're going to go, how is it and why is it fitting in this area? Mm-hmm. Like, what is the significance of why they chose here versus other areas?
Right.
Like, sometimes those mm-hmm. things can be really fun. Like, if I go to Orlando and I start to learn about how Walt Disney acquired that land, which was just really swampland, and then mm-hmm. he had to go kind of secretively put all this land together for Disney World. Mm-hmm. And I start to learn about that, and that's more in the home, right?
Okay. Well,
like, we might lean into Disney World as the star of our show, and we're gonna create these crazy themes and these crazy mm-hmm. experiences, this immersive experience. But part of that, when you get there, mm-hmm. we always call them Easter eggs. We leave Easter eggs throughout the property,
oh, yeah.
and I start to see, you know, the sketches that like Walt Disney did. We do that a lot, like mm-hmm. the old school sketches
right.
when he was making Mickey Mouse,
uh-huh.
and the story of the struggle of bringing all that to life, and how he was on his last mm-hmm. dollar, and everybody was telling him no, and mm-hmm. and having some of that in the house and the history of it is really fun. And to be able to bring that to life and stay very interesting for your guests when they're there, right. depending on how you lean into it. So experience wise, we usually pick a star, right. and then we're going to go multiple layers deep with that star. Right. Okay. And is that what you're asking?
That does make yeah. sense. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because with that example, that tells me, you know, how you're going to design the home, but then also who's going to come to the home and why they're coming to the home and all those things. So that really,
yeah. And all the, yeah. How are we going to just bring that to life? Right. How are we going to create this immersive experience that our audience would be interested in? Right. Right.
Yeah. All right. Next topic. When you're booking slow down / when to sell. Now, you kind of touched on the amenities of the hot tub, and some people think, oh, we need the barrel sauna because our competitor has a barrel sauna. And this is kind of like a two-sided question, because I want to ask what's like a thing people should do when their bookings slow down. And then let's go into, you know, someone has had a very successful short-term rental and they go, you know, we've vacationed, we've used it as a lifestyle asset for 5 years. We always go, it's in Colorado, we go skiing, it's our thing. But now, you know, we want to switch it up. We want to go to the beach. How to exit out of that? But okay, so let's first start with when bookings slow down. Yep. People start freaking out. What is it? You know?
So one, right now, we're naturally going into a slower season for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so we went, you know, Labor Day's over.
Right.
Summertime, done. Right. Kids are back in school. Everybody's kind of back in action.
Right.
And we see a natural slowdown in a lot of markets. Mm-hmm. Right. We're exiting our peak season, going into a slower season. Mm. This is when a lot of people start to hit a panic button of like,
right,
what happened?
Right, right, right.
It's like, well, what do you mean what happened? Look at these are seasonal properties.
Mm-hmm.
Many people, when we look at and they're like, well, you know, I was doing really, really well and now I have no bookings for the rest of the year. Nothing's on the calendar. And I look and say, okay, first of all, you're going into your slow season.
Right.
Second of all, you're still performing better than the averages for this time of year. You're just comparing it to July. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that. We're in a seasonal game, especially when you're in vacation home markets. So one,
right,
my first suggestion is actually assess your situation correctly. Yeah. Like look in the mirror and say, is it really as bad as I think? Or was I just not anticipating the slowdown? If that's the case, then learn the game you're playing, mm-hmm, and learn how to anticipate this stuff. Yeah. This is a great time of year to be able to take care of deferred maintenance, to be able to schedule like your, you know, any sort of, you know, updates or upkeep, mm-hmm, that you have on the property, mm-hmm, adding additional amenities that may require some sort of installation construction. Those things are, this is when you go into your slow season, those are great times to do that, because you're not leaving a lot of money on the table, because naturally your income is a little bit less right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many people talk about optimizing these properties during the slow season.
Mm-hmm.
We want to optimize year round. Mm-hmm. You optimize and put the most amount of money in your pocket by understanding how to optimize in the peak season.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when the consumer's spending the money.
Right.
So you need to get your unfair share of that business and higher dollar amounts during the peak season. So if you didn't optimize this peak season, right now is when we should be thinking, okay, what do I need to do to start to optimize next peak season? Mm. Because it will come before you know it. Most people have a little bit of a slowdown right now. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to have a little bit of a holiday spike. Then you're going to have a little bit of a slowdown. Then you're going to roll right into spring break and summertime again. And so you only have a couple months to make some adjustments to start hitting holidays correctly, start to hit spring break and summer next year correctly, to make some of these adjustments to really put the most amount of money in your pocket and maximize these assets, because you maximize them by doing what it takes to give the consumer a reason to pay you more above and beyond everybody else's prices during the peak season, because that's when they're willing to spend. Right. Doing that also has the effect of getting us our unfair share of business during the slow season, but it's, you're not going to put as much money in your pocket. You're naturally going to have the slowdown. So assess your situation correctly, first and foremost. Second is saying, okay, if I am going to slow down, or you say, hey, listen, maybe I don't like this property as much. Maybe I we're kind of tired of the beach. We want to switch it to the mountains. Mm-hmm. You know, those are great reasons to sell properties and say, hey, listen, maybe I just want to trade up. Maybe I want to, I want to change different markets. Like there's a lot, I tell, you know, investors all the time who are buying, there's a lot of really, really good properties on the market. Right now, you will see a ton of good properties start to hit the market. We see it every single year, especially in these beach communities, the ones that really came off their peak season heavy, and now they're going into the slower season. Good properties come on the market. And a lot of investors, especially new investors, think, well, if it's so good, why are they selling it? You know, there must be something wrong. It must not be performing that well. Yeah. No, most of them just didn't assess the situation correctly. Mm-hmm. Some of them, like we were talking about, they think, oh, crap, now it's slowing down. Well, it's naturally going to slow down. Underwrite it correctly. Understand the game you're playing, so you know what to anticipate. But also, you've got a lot of sellers that just say, hey, listen, I'm ready to get, you know, into a different market. There's also a lot of sellers who are looking at that return on equity and saying, hey, listen, I've had this property for a while, and usually for us, it's somewhere in that 5 to 7 year mark where you start to see a decline in your return on equity, because the appreciation has gone up so much and the revenue that we're generating is, you know, usually somewhere stabilized and maxed out. And all of a sudden, as that equity continues to grow, the return on the equity continues to drop because if I, let's say I'm making $100,000 a year revenue on a property and I have, and let's say I have $30,000 of equity, right? And I'm making $100,000 a year. That's a really good return on equity, right? I'm tripling my money. Like, that's probably a not a good example because it's usually inverse. Let's say I have $100,000 in the property and I'm making $30,000 net. Okay. So let's say I'm not my gross, my net. I'm putting $30,000 in my pocket. I have $100,000 in the property when I buy it.
Okay.
Not bad. Pretty good. Stabilized property making me $30,000. I'm making a 30% return on that equity. $100,000 making 30 grand.
Okay.
So let's say that 30 grand continues to grow at a modest pace. And next year I'm making 35,000. But that property, let's say it was a $500,000 property and it went up to, all of a sudden it went up another $50,000 in equity, right? Let's say I had a 10% jump in appreciation. So now I've got $150,000 of equity returning me $35,000. So that ends up being, I'm like looking at that saying, okay, instead of a 30% return on my money, I'm making somewhere around 18% return on my money, 20% return, whatever. My math, that's tough to do in my head.
Yeah.
Let's say next year it jumps up to 200,000 in equity.
I see.
And I'm making $40,000. Now I'm at a 20% return, right? So I'm going from 30 to probably 25 to 20. And then next year I have, let's say I have 300,000 in equity and I'm making 50. Right now I'm at a 15% return on. So my revenue keeps going up, but my equity keeps growing faster. And so my return on that equity keeps dropping. There will be a point, usually, like I said, 5 to 7 years from now, you're like, man, that's my return on equity. I'm Dave and I are selling a property right now. We're actually under contract on it. We close in October. And it's exactly why we're selling it. This property has done well. It's doubled in value. We're making good money, but our return on equity has shrunk so far that we're like, man, we're getting like a 3% return on our equity right now. As far as cash flow goes, we're getting a good clip when it comes to appreciation, but we're saying we'd rather pull that out and put it into a bigger and better market where we can get still the appreciation, but a better return cash flow return on that equity. So those are reasons too. Yeah. So good property, good asset. It's been a good asset. We're just ready to get a better return on that equity.
Okay. Now, oh man, that was great.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff right there.
That was fantastic. Here's a fun one. Would you sell the property, right? Do you now go bigger and better or smaller and more refined?
I almost always go bigger and better.
Bigger and better.
Here's the reason.
Okay.
If I take it and go smaller, usually that smaller, refined, more refined type of a property is only going to have, it's going to max out on my return, right? I can only charge X amount. Like I'm not going to make $300,000 on a $300,000 property, right? And so, but I could, let's say I had $300,000 and I paid cash for that. I'm not going to make $300,000 on that property. I could go take that $300,000, maybe put it into $1 million property or multi-million. Like, you know, I could essentially probably get $1.5 million property with a $300,000 investment. And now all of a sudden that property continues to go up in value. It's likely if that property goes up 10%, I just made $150,000 on that investment. That $300,000 property, if it went up 10%, it made $30,000. So it would have to go up 50% for me to match that same gain, just on appreciation wise, right? Just on the property going up in value. Same is true with revenue. That $1.5 million property is going to command a lot more revenue than a $300,000 property. And so typically we're trading up, we're rolling up in
properties. Yeah, you're leapfrogging to a bigger and better one. Okay, I can cut this if we need to, but question, if I buy my first short-term rental, I bonus depreciate, I get all the tax savings, all that good stuff. It goes well. 5 years later, 7 years later, I sell it. I get another short-term rental. On that second short-term rental, can I bonus depreciate again?
You have to, your basis changes. So it depends on what you did on the tax side. So one, you can, so you have to, when you depreciate property, you have to recapture depreciation when you sell. So however much you depreciated, you got to recapture that. Now it's not a one-to-one because as time goes on, you recapture less and like, cause there are things that actually depreciated over time, but let's just assume I did a bonus depreciation. And I saved $100,000 on taxes. So what that's going to do is I go buy my next property. It's a bigger and better property. And I'm going to 1031 that into my next property, which reduces the my allowable depreciation on the next property, right? So I'm basically putting that back into this property. But as I went bigger and better, there's a gap that I'm still going to be able to have some money that I'm going to be able to go in and say, okay, based because I bought a bigger and better property, I'm going to be able to tap into and say, okay, the my basis on that cost seg and depreciation is going to be affected by what I rolled over, but there's going to be, because I went bigger and better, there's going to be excess that I'm going to be able to depreciate again.
Right. Okay.
So
that makes sense.
Starts to get complicated when you do that. That's why we have those people a lot smarter than me. You know, this is way above my pay scale to talk about right now, but it's, we get that you get CPAs, you get 1031 exchange experts, you understand how to do all this, the cost seg experts on the next property. They'll look at all that and you will have that difference in what's still available to you to go depreciate again the second time.
Mm. Okay. All right. That was fantastic. All right. Let's move into these two questions here. So if you haven't watched episode 305, we talked about, you know, the Airbnb new 15%. Go watch that. It's a great episode. Here are the two questions we got on school. I'll read these to you. First and foremost, wanted to dig a little deeper with your comment about potentially increasing the percentage above 15.2%. Does it make sense to put 18%? It would be a straightforward 15% discount with direct bookings as it includes a 3% credit card fee. Thoughts?
Yes. I mean, simple answer. Yeah. I mean, try to, you know, you want to, if you're trying to keep everything the same, you're just now the 3% you were already paying on direct bookings today. And so you were already kind of covering that cost. So unless you were already baking that into your cost to cover it right now. But if you're saying, okay, my net to remain the same, I've got to cover that 15% fee that Airbnb's making me charge plus the 3% fee on the back end on credit card processing fees. So we said last week, simple answer, let's raise our rates.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully a lot of hosts will say, hey, listen, we're going to raise our rates to account for that, so our net stays the same. Mm-hmm. We also broke it down and showed how the guest is not going to pay more by us doing that,
right?
Because they don't have those fees anymore. Mm-hmm. So it ends up being the same dollar amount that the guest pays for the homes. Now, that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Mark my words. There will be the majority of hosts are going to keep their prices the same. Mm-hmm. The guest is going to start paying 15% less for the same property, and the host is going to make 15% less because they were behind the eight ball. Some of them aren't even paying attention that this is happening.
Right.
A lot of them should be because it's happening to the people that are using PMS systems, property management systems, and solutions. So your property managers are more the professional hosts that are really paying attention to things. Mm-hmm. They're gonna see those fees, but hopefully. My hope is that the majority of the hosts out there are just going to raise their fees, raise their rates, which means our net will stay the same. The dollar amount that the consumer is paying is going to stay the same.
Right.
And so Airbnb still makes their same money. It's just whose pockets it all coming out of. Right. So, but if we are smart enough as hosts to raise our rates by the 15%, Laura wants to raise them 18% cover booking or processing fees for the credit card companies. If she does direct bookings, great. No problem. Raise the rates, cover that. Right. But at the end of the day, raise the rates so everything remains the same for the consumer, for us as the host, for Airbnb. Everybody's still getting their money, paying the same amounts. And so, but the risk and what's likely to happen is there's going to be a whole bunch of people who don't account for that. Yeah. Rates are going to come down. And so you're going to have to be one of those hosts that holds those rates high. And you're saying, okay, if I'm going to do that, my only way to do that is understanding, am I giving the consumer a reason to pay me more than those other properties that they can get for 15% less?
Right.
And so it goes back down to the fundamentals of what it takes to get your unfair share of business, because you're going to have to deal with that at the end of October when this hits.
Now, it seems weird that say someone is behind the eight ball, right? They don't increase their rates, but at some point they're going to look at how much money they're making. at some point they're going to find out about the rate increase, right? So over time, wouldn't you think that even if they're behind the eight ball, they're still going to increase because people want their money?
Yes, but people are very worried about increasing rates.
Okay.
When they don't understand that the consumer will actually pay you more if you give them a reason to.
Right.
And so it's you know, I think everybody thinks that the only way to compete is on price.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely not true. It's not true. I mean, it's overwhelmingly not true when you actually look at it and study it, is the consumer will pay more for something better. And they will pay more for something unique and personalized and different. And they love to. You just got to give them a reason to.
Yeah.
And so focus on the reasons that people will pay you more.
Yeah.
Better service, better communication, better quality, more personalized, unique, different, right? All those different things that we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
If you give them a reason and do all that, as a professional host, you don't have to worry about it.
Right.
It's when you become a commodity, when you become the same as everybody else, that it becomes really hard.
Oh, no.
You're just competing on price, right? And so
that's scary, dude. When you start talking about that, I get scared, bro. I get scared.
It's unfortunately, it's where a lot of people play the game. Now, and there are people that are going to look at it and say, holy crap, you know, I just charged $100 a night and I'm only making, you know, I'm 70, you know, after you pay, let's say you pay your 15% to Airbnb, you pay 25 or 30, let's say 25% to your management company. I mean, there's 40% right off the top.
Right.
And you're putting 60% of that. You're like, man, I just rented for $100 a night and I put $60 in my pocket. And people are going to look at it and say, what they're likely going to say is the short-term rental game is not the game I want to play, which is okay. I get it. Right. Because you're not playing it correctly anyways. You need to be able to understand that those fees are going to be in there. So let's make sure that our net is the net that we need and that we want to put in our pocket and cover our cost and make the money that we're trying to make in these markets.
Love it. Next question. Here we go.
Hey.
With this change, since I hope to be set up by the end of the year, how should I be putting this into my underwriting spreadsheet? Should I have a variable cost in here now for 15% Airbnb fee? What effect would it have on the nightly rate I'm expecting based on the AirDNA comps?
This is a really good question. So let's break this down. So Christina's asking and saying, hey, listen, I'm running my numbers right now.
Right.
And now there's going to be this extra 15% fee going to Airbnb.
Right.
Right. And so she's saying, you know, where most of these numbers are based on the numbers that the consumers pay in Airbnb. Now there are Vrbo numbers in there as well. How do I account for this? Really, Christina, this is going to affect underwriting for sure. You know, we need to think about it and look at it. However, you have to understand, like we were saying before, consumer pays the same, we pay the same, or we charge the same. So they're just showing you the gross revenue these properties are making, the total dollar that the consumer is paying. And right now, I believe, and I should probably double check this.
Okay.
I believe they are showing the fees that the consumer is paying to Airbnb right now, not just our fees. And so they're showing those fees. Now they are not coming out of our pocket right now. And so, but they're being reflected.
Okay.
If they are being reflected right now in the gross revenue numbers that we're looking at, and then it changes to who is paying those fees in October, all of a sudden that shifts our underwriting and saying, yeah, we need to somehow account for that fee and take another 15% off the top, right? As a fee.
Right.
If they're not showing those, then we don't need to do it because they're not showing them right now anyways, right? So they're not showing that actual, like if we charge $100 a night and AirDNA is reporting or Airbnb is reporting that booked at $100 a night because that's what we got. And it didn't show the service fees that the consumer's paying, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter for you. However, it still does matter because we need to be able to raise those rates. And so what we're hopefully doing is not accounting like we're talking about right now by taking and adding an extra fee in there. What we're going to do is say, listen, I'm gonna bank on charging an extra 15% on the top of that.
Right.
Right.
That makes sense.
My gross revenue should ultimately be higher than that. if it, and that's, so there's two scenarios and we probably should verify, because I'm actually not sure on which one it is does AirDNA, who we look at and pull their numbers, are they accounting for, in their gross revenue numbers and their nightly rate numbers, are they accounting for the fees that the consumer's paying?
Okay.
I know they have cleaning fees in there, but that comes to us as revenue. The Airbnb fees, I'm not sure if they're in there or not. And so if they're not in there, what we're going to do is actually plan on charging a little bit higher. If they are in there, we know that we're going to keep that same nightly rate, but we're going to be eating those fees. And so we do need to account for it as an expense line item. Okay. So one way we're putting it in, we have to account for it either way in our underwriting. One way we're going to account for it as, so follow me. Okay. One, if they are charging, or if they are showing us the Airbnb fees in the nightly rate and the gross revenue.
Right.
I said that earlier. I said, I think they are. I actually think they're not. I said that wrong. I don't think they're in there because they're showing us the revenue we're making, which is cleaning fees, our total nightly rate and cleaning fees, right? They're reporting that because those are things that we collect. I don't think they're showing us fees that we don't collect because they're not showing taxes, and I don't think they show the service fee. So those things, if they are not showing that, all we have to do is say, listen, my goal is to plan on charging an extra 15% on top of those rates, those nightly rates that they're showing me. And then I've got to account for that extra expense, but I'm going to bump my nightly rate to have it as a wash.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
If they are showing that and they are showing us the nightly rate and the gross revenue with Airbnb, the consumer guest Airbnb fees lumped into those numbers, and that is all included as it is today, then absolutely we need to have that 15% showing, because we're going to keep that rate the same. We're just going to be paying those fees, and so we need to do that. I don't think that's the case.
Okay.
I think they're only showing us the revenue that we are collecting currently.
Okay. Good stuff today, man. Good stuff today. We're at 41 minutes, so there you go.
41, okay. Awesome.
Well, we did good.
I'm kind of disappointed in myself that I don't know if those fees are in revenue or not. So we'll double check. Let's see. No, AirDNA's core revenue and occupancy metrics do not account for Airbnb's platform fees. Yeah, okay. That's what I thought. So it is not in there. So what we would do, Christine, in our underwriting going forward, that underwriting is accurate as saying, hey, listen, this is what the consumer's paying right now, but really the consumer is paying an extra 15% on top of that. And so knowing that, we need to make sure that we say, hey, listen, our strategy is to raise those rates by 15%. You're buying a new property. You're setting it up. Let's do what it takes to charge an extra 15% on those properties. Hosts like me, and a lot of our Vodacy family, hopefully a lot of our listeners, are going to raise our rates.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it overnight on the 27th. I would start doing it now. I'd start doing a 5% increase now. I'd do another 5% increase in a couple of weeks. I would start to inch my prices up right now.
Okay, that's really good.
Just start to get those prices up a little bit. You know, every couple of weeks I'd raise them by 5%. Start inching those prices up. So it's not just a shock across the board that prices are raised, right?
Should, my last question here, we're already going. Should the rates are coming either way, you're going to bump your rates up.
Right.
You realize, man, my property just doesn't have what it takes to bump up the rate. Should you continue to bump up the rate, or in the off season start to do those renovations now? So then the next year comes around, you can now deserve to bump up those rates. Does that make sense?
Yes. All of the above.
Okay.
What's going to happen is the consumer is going to tell you. The consumers are very unforgiving, and
they'll tell you.
They're going to say, we're not paying you for that much for that. And so if you want to push your prices, many people are underpriced already. It's shocking how many people can get away with a price increase, and they don't think they can. They don't believe they can, and they actually can. And so I would for sure start to raise my rates. I also would work on, if I think I have ways to improve my property in the off season and create, you know, better demand and give the consumer a better reason to book my property, I would do it all at the same time.
Okay.
Right. And so eventually the consumer is going to say, oh, sorry, Jake, you're asking way too much for that. Yeah, yeah. It's not. And we judge that based on the time of year, if I'm in my peak season and I haven't, and I raise my rates and I haven't got a booking in 2 weeks, then I'm pretty much, the consumers are telling me I'm out of line, right? Yeah. If I'm in my shoulder season, it might take me a month to be able to be able to determine whether I'm overpriced or not overpriced. So the slower the season, the longer it takes you to determine whether that's just the season or whether it's the consumer saying, ah, I don't really like what you have to offer right? And so in the peak season, it's a lot easier to make adjustments because we get almost instant feedback from the consumers because they're spending money and they're booking properties. And so we know that. And if they're not booking ours, there's a reason, right?
All right. Sounds good. That's all I have for today.
Okay. Awesome, guys. Well, we'll wrap it up. We always appreciate you spending your time with us, and we know how valuable it is, and it does mean a lot that you spend it with us and go through these conversations, listen in on these conversations. Send us your questions. Those things are helpful as these conversations. We love when we get those questions, so send them in at sport@vozacy.com, and we'll get those questions on the docket. If you have more than 30 seconds or you know somebody else that would like to be a part of these conversations, share the show, like it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. Those things are much appreciated and help us grow the show. We don't run ads or sponsorships on the show. The only way it grows is organically through you guys and giving us those thumbs ups and giving other people the the notification that they should listen in, right? Yeah. And so final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode is pick that one thing you can do today. Start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.